And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the American Red Cross Eastern Pennsylvania region, we have its new CEO, Guy Triano. Guy, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
I am fine. And you're not really that shiny and new. You've been there for 14 years, but now you have stepped up to the CEO position. So congratulations and welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. Happy to be on board.
And let's get started right away with, can you give us a little bit about the American Red Cross, but in particular the Eastern Pennsylvania region. Give us the elevator speech. Who are you?
Great. My name is Guy Triano. I'm the regional CEO for Eastern Pennsylvania, and that covers 17 counties from Philadelphia pretty much all the way up to the New York state border. What we do, several different things part of that. We do blood, of course. We do disaster relief, preparedness, fundraising, service to armed forces, and training.
That is a lot. And when you talk about 17 counties, you've got it like, there are like 6 million people in your service region.
That's correct. Yeah, it was actually a little over that, but is a large area, predominantly most of it being in the Philadelphia area, but all the way up to Susquehanna County.
And that includes a heck of a lot of territory that's different. You've got shorelines. You've got mountainous areas. You've got urban areas. You've got buildings that can fire and buildings that can burn, and you've got tornadoes, and you've got hurricanes that can blow. So you've really pretty much got the glot melange of all of the districts here, don't you?
We sure do, and we've experienced a little bit of all of that, actually. A couple of weeks ago, we had the tornado up in the Wilkes-Barre area, and then most recently, we just had some flooding in several of our counties in Pennsylvania, as well as constant fires just about every single day. In the city alone here of Philadelphia, you're having anywhere between 5 and 7 fires each day.
And you carry a beeper. I mean, how many times in the course of a night do the beepers go off? I mean, how many nights a week are you out on the scene of some fire that is devastating to some family?
You know, we're 24/7, and I was actually having a conversation with my communications manager, and I said to Dave, I said, I've never turned off my cell phone, and he said, either have I. And it's a lifestyle more than it is a job. It's obviously helping the community, and you have to be around 24/7, whether it's by cell phone. Not too much beepers anymore, but certainly cell phones.
I dated myself there when I just said that.
That's fine.
We're just going to pretend that I didn't say that part there. But let's talk a little bit about the disaster relief that you provide to the individuals, to people here, the families, or it could be dozens of families if it's an apartment building. When disaster strikes locally in the middle of the night, the Red Cross is there. And what are you doing when you get there?
You know, we're providing assistance, and that is in different fronts. Obviously, you know, sheltering, short-term sheltering assistance would be the immediate if and of course the family needs some sheltering assistance. We provide financial assistance if the family qualifies and needs financial assistance. We also provide educational experience, like plans for future, as well as any kind of recovery. And we also stay with them for a couple of weeks after the fact, not physically, but we can provide mental care specialists, training different specialists and counselors, and that are all pretty much volunteer-based that can walk them through that whole recovery part.
You see people when they are at their absolute worst, the worst that can possibly happen. And sometimes they're people who are going to be displaced for months, people who have lost absolutely everything, whole families or individuals in these cases. And are they all the same? Or are they all different?
And everyone is different. And I will give you an example of kind of what I just went through. I recently, with the flooding that existed up in several counties, specifically in Susquehanna County, I went up there to physically see the damage. And I don't think that you can actually explain it until you can physically touch it and see it. And there was upwards to 5 and 6 feet of rain in certain areas. And these people and some of these families that had nothing lost everything. And it's just unless you can see it, you don't realize how much support they need from us. And just being there for them, you know, obviously, whether it be just, you know, giving them meals and snacks. And this recent flooding, we provided over 6,000 meals and snacks to families. Sheltering, which is obviously our predominantly, if we know that they need shelters, we've opened up 8 shelters, housed many of different individuals. Right here in Philadelphia, if you're displaced because of a fire, we actually have a Red Cross house, which is a recovery center as well, where we can get people on their feet and get them a place to live prior to, you know, getting out on their own. And that's what we're trying to be there for.
And I know that the Red Cross House, that's kind of unique, isn't it? You're one of the few, if not the only, Red Cross chapter that actually can provide this kind of service.
It's unique. It's the only kind in the entire United States, the only kind in the entire Red Cross. What I love about that house, and I welcome anybody that wants to get a tour of that house, I'm happy to do it, because once you can get in there and see and feel it, you realize the good that you do. It's a mini hotel in a sense. It's a 26-bed facility where we provide recovery service. But on top of that, here's the nice part. It's not a shelter. It's a recovery planner. We keep all of the families together in the same room.
That's amazing.
It's amazing that you don't, because a lot of times you go to shelters, they separate the families, the men, the females, the children. This house keeps them all together. So, and you're coming, maybe let's say it's a house fire and you've lost everything, and we provide you with a stay in this place. To be able to keep your family together during some of maybe your darkest times is rewarding. We also provide 3 meals a day at this house, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and there's laundry facilities, there's library facilities, and we also have caseworkers that work out of that building that, again, can help them get on their road to recovery.
Oh, geez. And I know that it's gift cards to them and support as they try to rebuild their lives.
Yes, exactly. And honestly, everybody needs a jump start during those times. Majority of the people at the Red Cross House are for house fires, but certainly, you know, flooding can be one, any kind of disasters. The building collapses, all of those individuals will house it.
Mm-hmm. And you're there for the emergency responders too, aren't you? The ones who are actually fighting the fire. And,
oh, yes. Yeah, you know, we're certainly there with them, providing them a lot of times refreshments, support out there. And honestly, we work hand in hand very closely with the local fire department.
Yeah, we always think when emergency strikes that it's the people who are displaced, the people who are flooded out or burned out and all that. But then it's also the ones who are there who are working long after the families have been removed from the scene that are still fighting the fires, digging things out and all of that, and they need support as well.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point. A lot of times people think that right after the fact, once they're put into whether it's the Red Cross House or, you know, a hotel stay, that they're set. But there's a lot of work that goes on afterwards, especially with our police and fire. We work so closely together that, in fact, last week I was with Commissioner Teal and a couple of our Red Cross volunteers and staff workers, and they're on first name basis. It's a very comforting feeling to know that we work so closely with them. We can't provide services without them. They certainly can't provide services without us.
Now, I'm going to jump the gun, and I was going to talk about some of the programs and the things and initiatives that you're coming up with, but you're also working, though, to prevent those fires, to prevent a family from getting displaced or an apartment building from taken out. You know, housing for dozens and dozens, and I think, are you working with the fire department on Sound the Alarm?
Yes, that so Sound the Alarm is our big signature event, and what we do is, just to kind of give you a stat, which I think is really deep, is every day 7 people die in home fires across the United States, and a lot of that is due to lack of smoke alarms. And Sound the Alarm is kind of an initiative that we have in place where we're preventative ahead of time. We go into high-risk areas where we're installing free of charge smoke alarms. We work very closely with the police and really the fire department and canvas the areas, canvas neighborhoods, install smoke alarms, replace the batteries. Like if the batteries are not there, we'll replace them. A lot of people don't realize that smoke alarms – should last about 10 years, right? So the ones that we're installing, a lot of times people that fortunately, hopefully, don't ever have to use them. But if you do have to use them, you've got to check the batteries. And if they are, if the unit itself is over 10 years old, we highly encourage you to replace it. Part of that, Sound the Alarm, and when we canvas the areas, we automatically will replace the smoke alarms right if they're approaching the 10-year mark.
Are you going door-to-door with this, or is this something that neighbors should just say, hey, I'm going to call you up and get that free smoke alarm? How are you going to do this program?
A couple things. We had our first year, which is an extremely successful year. We had over 100,000, this is nationwide, smoke alarms that were installed. But we canvassed the areas ahead of time. So we let the community know that we're going to be in your area at a certain given time by doing door hangers or door signs. So they're aware of it. A lot of folks will be home, individuals will be home, and then we come during that time, let's call it 10 to 2, and we'll go out there with volunteers. And a lot of these volunteers are Red Cross volunteers or local businesses and communities that provide the workforce. We do a training that day of for them, and then we canvass the areas. And again, I can't stress that these smoke alarms are free of charge. The Red Cross is providing that service directly for it.
I can't imagine a neighborhood that would not get wholeheartedly behind this than to keep a neighborhood intact, not miss, you know, a house affects the whole one fire affects the whole neighborhood, the whole community.
Yeah, especially in the city of Philadelphia, you have a lot of these row houses that are attached to one another. I mean, one house can go on fire. It can certainly spread between four and five different houses at one time. I will tell you, I was fortunate to be part of the Sound the Alarm last May, and we canvassed an area in Philadelphia. And again, just like the floods that I spoke about briefly, getting into those houses, into that community. First off, the volunteers that support the cause are welcoming. You know, they're great individuals. The communities, especially by canvassing it a couple of days ahead of time, they really welcome you. And to go into those houses, you'll be surprised with how many houses they just either don't have alarms, or you'll see the alarm that's sitting there with the case open and they removed the battery because maybe they needed the battery for something else.
Or you get the place, it has a battery, it has a working fire alarms.
Smoke
and
detector.
And then, you know, years go by and nobody comes in for that maintenance, especially for the elderly.
Yeah, especially for the elderly, which maybe don't have the means to replace it themselves or to check it themselves. And those are the areas that we go into. Plus, the smoke detector that we're installing is a 10-year lithium battery. So once you put it up there, yes, you test it every couple of months, but you don't have to replace the battery, which is really nice.
Well, let's go on. Let's continue on with preparedness. And one of the things that we've talked about once before on this show, and that was the pillowcase project. And just the idea of that is just wonderful. Can you tell us about the Pillowcase Project?
Yeah, so Pillowcase Project is really dealing with the youth in grades 3 through 5. And what I love about that is really it's educating the students in the classrooms where we come in, and it's exactly what it says, a Pillowcase Project. We've partnered with Walt Disney World on this project, and it's a pillowcase, just as it seems, with a couple of logos on it and, you know, Disney logos on it. And you bring them to the classroom and you speak to them. You're preparing you're educating and preparing the students on an evacuation plan. So one, they'll actually make a route, of an escape route in case there is a house fire. And then put also your personal emergency supplies, what they need, into this pillowcase. The value of that project is so that the children get excited and educated in the classrooms, but the hope is that they would go home, explain this pillowcase project, sit down with their parents to talk about the evacuation plan and the essential things that they'll need to have inside of that. Last year alone in Eastern Pennsylvania, we educated over 4,300 students in disaster preparedness through alone just this pillowcase project.
You know, that's amazing. And getting into the classroom alone just to talk to them and get that conversation going, because we keep forgetting in this area that we think, oh, well, we're safe. What's going to happen? We're not going to have an earthquake, but we can have a train derailment. That means that an entire neighborhood could be evacuated, or it could be that one fire that will displace an entire block. Being prepared is for everybody.
I think that's the single most important thing is being prepared, because just as you mentioned, the derailments, the house fires, those all have occurred, you know, and they will continue to occur. It's not it's not if this is going to happen again. It's when this is going to happen. If you can prepare and educate the youth at a young age, you'll be a lot less likely to experience one of these or not know what to do when you're experiencing one of these house fires or disasters.
So the kid now knows this, but how are you getting into the parents and understanding what everybody should know before disaster strikes? Everything from, you know, gas in the car or having some water handy if you have to shelter in place. Does the Red Cross work with all of those kind of programs?
We do. And through that pillowcase project, just to kind of – the hope is that they would go home to their parents, their guardians, and speak about what they've learned, but then to come up with an evacuation plan during that. A lot of people, they don't have safety and first aid kit. I think that's extremely important to have in the house. You have to have conversations with your family about evacuation plans if this does happen. You have to have a flashlight with batteries. You have to have a case of water and some dry food. And to not only to have that on hand, but you should check it every couple of months to make sure that it's, you know, the batteries are working and it is working. Your hope is never to have to use any of these supplies and never have to ever use an emergency kit. But the fact of the matter is many people do. And when you do, if you do, you want to be prepared.
Yeah, we're not talking about survivalism here or anything like that. And no matter what your economic situation, a flashlight, and even if it's just simple as having copies of all of your medications ready so that if you have to leave your home, you leave your home prepared.
Absolutely. Whether it's, you know, and some people go as far as having a bag already packed, you know, pre-set aside with all that, those things. That's certainly an option. But I think the education and having conversations with this around the house, too many people take it for granted. And then they're almost in a panic if this does to happen. The hope is that it would never happen. But the reality is it will, and it does, and you want to be prepared.
And it will always happen when your cell phone batteries are dead, your car is out of gas, and you don't know where everybody is, and you didn't plan on a place or a way to get in contact with each other.
Good old Murphy's Law, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is. And, of course, anything we talk about today, you are going to be able to find at redcross.org. Redcross.org has links to every program, everything that we have discussed today. And so go there to get more information. And you are listening to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. And with us today, the CEO of the American Red Cross Eastern Pennsylvania Region, Guy Triano. And again, for more information, redcross.org. The place to go. We're just talking about all of these disaster things and being prepared, but there's one thing you can just plan on, like the turning of the tides and all of that, and that is hurricanes. And September is National Preparedness Month, and hurricanes really beat the crap out of us here. I think I can say that word. You know, they just like to come here and whoop us some. What's the Red Cross's proactive programming, or what are you telling us who live in these areas that flood and get whipped?
A couple of things to note, and people just think, you know, hurricane season is extremely long, right? It starts June 1st, it goes through November. The peak of the season is September. This time last year, if you remember, this is the week that we were hit with, you know, Hurricane Harvey and then Irma and then Maria. We're hopefully not expecting any type of year that we had last year, but we're in the middle of hurricane season right now, and it's certainly going to be ramping up.
What can we do other than listen and do what we're told to do, but what we don't do? So,
unfortunately, a lot of folks and individuals don't do it, but there are folks that do it, and we thank you for that. I don't think you can be more prepared. You can never be overprepared. You need to have conversations with your family about that. You need to have people prepared. You know, get an emergency kit, right? That is important. Make sure that that emergency kit contains food, water, basic supplies for family members that you're going to need for at least 3 days. Medications that you mentioned, that's also important. You have to have a plan. You know, if this was to happen in this area, where are we going to meet? Where are we going to go? And you have to be informed. I will tell you, you mentioned the redcross.org, but another way I think where we've come a long way of recent is our apps, the blood donor apps. I highly recommend everybody go into the store and download the Red Cross apps. We have several different apps. We have a blood app. We have emergency response apps. And by finding them, you can just go onto your app store by searching for the American Red Cross. I highly recommend that everybody downloads, you know, whether it be the weather app, the hurricane app, the blood app. You can get a lot of information for that. Stay current. Set your alerts up where you always have an idea of when something is coming. That's not going to make you 100% prepared, but it will certainly have you more prepared than you are today.
And you just mentioned the blood, and I know you came over from the blood side there, the blood services, and that's always going to be near and dear to your heart. We're at the end of vacation time, but now we're back in school, so everybody's busy again. There's always an excuse not to donate, and I know the need is pretty great.
Yeah, the need is not only great, the need is constant. This region, just so you know, compared to the United States, It was one of the larger regions for collecting blood. We collected last year just shy of 150,000 units of blood. A lot of people don't realize that we collect blood 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday, even on the holidays, we're collecting units of blood. And again, you can get that information at redcross.org or specifically redcrossblood.org. And there's also a blood app as well. Coming off of the summer months, the shortage is very low. A lot of reasons people don't realize it is high schools and colleges are out. Many of individuals and businesses go on vacation. Although people are on vacation, the need for the blood is constant, and certainly the hospital patients don't go on vacation, so they need the blood.
I always attribute the shortage to vacations and people just being away or covering and not having enough time to give, but I keep forgetting high schools and colleges do a lot of donating, and companies do through their blood drives and stuff and initiatives to get out there and do it.
Yeah, it's a very large portion of our blood supply. And I'll tell you, the nice thing, very similar to the Pillowcase Project, where you're educating individuals at a young age, we like to get our high school students donating at a young age because the hope is to have them through college and life to be lifelong blood donors.
I know you can do this. Throw out some of those numbers or figures about one unit, what you can do with one unit of blood.
So one unit of blood can save up to three lives. So what we do is we take the plasma, the red cells, and the platelets. We manufacture the products of blood, and then we distribute them directly to the hospitals. We're an importing region too. So Eastern Pennsylvania is an importing region because of the size of our trauma centers and the size of our hospitals. When you donate blood in this region, that blood is staying to service the local hospitals around here.
And there are procedures that are being delayed for lack of some of the platelets, et cetera, that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the platelets that you mentioned, it's a very short shelf life. It's a 5-day shelf life on platelets. So we're in constant need. And that's really where that 365-day, 7-day-away operation happens with platelets. To schedule blood donations, if you're ever interested, redcrossblood.org. I would also like to mention that volunteers are a big part of our organization, right? So not only do we need volunteers for disaster cycle services and volunteer bases, but blood needs volunteers as well. Philadelphia needs blood transportation specialists. Those are individuals that basically collect the blood at the blood drives and bring it back to our Spring Garden location where it gets manufactured, or in a sense, it can actually pick up the units of blood at our Philadelphia Spring Garden location, deliver them to all of the hospitals.
So you need volunteers at the collection points. You need them to move the blood. You need volunteers to do your Sound the Alarm program. You need volunteers to work the disaster scenes and all that stuff. Is this really a volunteer-driven organization?
This is solely, for the most part, 80% of our staff here are volunteer-based. We rely heavily on the volunteers. They're special individuals that make it happen. I make no excuse. If we don't have volunteers, this organization does not survive and be able to provide the services to everybody out there that they're doing. And I will tell you, it's as easy as for sure. If you're interested in being a volunteer, redcross.org. To look up information on scheduling where volunteers are. People sometimes shy away from that because they think it could be, a 40, 50-hour a week commitment. There is many of different schedules. There's many of different positions, volunteer-based, that we can utilize. So certainly, if it's something that interests you, I recommend that you go onto the website, get some information on it, talk to one of our specialists, and we can kind of detail and find a location for, a specific sweet spot for volunteers.
And again, go to redcross.org, and you can find out all that information right there. Now, let's go into some of the things that we forget that you offer because, all the fire and the fire alarms and the blood, et cetera. Your services to the armed forces, you have a special charge from the military to work with our servicemen and women.
Yes. So one of the reasons how Clara Barton started the Red Cross years ago was actually in our service to armed forces. A lot of people don't realize that, but that's kind of how the organization started. Last year, Eastern Pennsylvania alone provided 4,500 services for members and veterans of their families. We work closely with veterans hospitals in our footprint. In Philadelphia itself, they have one local veterans hospital. The other thing that we don't do is we're that link. The American Red Cross works with the military, and we're that link when somebody has a family member overseas and needs to bring them home or possibly relay some harsh, difficult information, maybe of a family member passing or something back home. We're that bridge where they come, they contact the Red Cross, we validate the services, and we can actually get military families back home or in touch with their families back at home. No. The other thing that we provide, too, is a lot of training, resiliency training and different types of counseling and services for the families that have military folks aboard, as well as when the veteran itself comes back, we provide classes and a network, really, for them to get back on their feet.
That's amazing. Well, now let's go into other other services that you do. We've only got a few minutes left here, believe it or not. Swimming, first aid, you talk to classes, you go out and meet the public, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What are some of the other things that you have?
Yeah, so last year we provided over 95,000 people in first aid and CPR. So obviously the top two ones are CPR, first aid. I highly recommend that you download that app as well, Red Cross First Aid app, and our emergency response to get a lot of preparedness information right there in the palm of your hands. The more you educate yourself, the more you come familiar and close with that, you help yourself out. And again, that's right at that app store, American Red Cross. Just search the apps. But besides that, certainly lifeguarding and swimming safety classes. But CPR, first aid are top two targets where we target that.
And these are offered at chapters throughout the area?
Yep. So the nice thing is a lot of these beginning parts of these classes are done online, where you can do a lot of the classes online. Certainly at our chapters, our local chapters across the entire country. We have several in eastern Pennsylvania. But we will also go to places of work or school to train individuals. And again, you can get that information at redcross.org. And they'll have a specialist that will call you up, set up specifically what you're looking for. But we will actually bring the training to your place to do that.
And of course, if you are a business and you would like to do a blood drive, you can reach out as well. There are plenty of ways to get involved.
Yes, absolutely. Whether it be blood drives, whether it be training in first aid, whether it be disaster alert responses, whether it be part of that sound alarm system, whether it be donating dollars, and certainly whether it be volunteering.
I was going to say, you're always looking for donations as well to keep everything going.
Yes, to keep these programs going, especially the disaster responses and, providing shelters and setting up. There's a cost with that, and that's what, of course, redcross.org as well to schedule a financial donation as well. Whether it be businesses or personal contribution, we appreciate that as well.
And do those stay local as well if you want to donate to the disaster relief locally or the fire relief, et cetera?
Yes, you can designate your dollars to go. We actually encourage people to not specifically designate their dollars, mm-hmm. but to put it in the Red Cross pool so that we can find out across the system where our services go. But certainly we will they can, if they choose to designate dollars, we can make that work.
Okay. And, of course, for more information, everything is found at your website.
Redcross.org.
Go to redcross.org for more information about everything from downloading those apps on preparedness, on weather, on emergency notifications for blood services, or for just to learn first aid, go to redcross.org. That's also where you'll find ways to get involved as a volunteer, to donate blood, or to make a donation. And, again, that is redcross.org. And my guest today has been Guy Triano. He is the CEO of the American Red Cross of Eastern Pennsylvania. That region includes some 6 million plus people, and it was 17 counties. So if you're hearing this, they're taking care of you right now. So for more information about everything from, again, the apps to the sound, the alarm, or the pillowcase project, and schools can request you to come in and do that?
Yes, we can.
Okay, go to redcross.org. Guy, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You're always welcome back. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.